listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Willie Dills. This is episode number 39, the Roberto Kelly episode. Good to dig deep for that one. I think it just took Chad remembering offhand that Roberto Kelly is number 39. And this is a special episode. So first, I'm going to welcome my co-host and good friend, Mr. Chad King. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Willie?
I think I'm doing good. I think I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, you're recovering right now, aren't you?
Well, I'm a little sick. I'm a little sick, but other than me being sick, look, the world's not all about me. There's bigger things going on in this world than me.
But not in your world.
Yeah, in my world.
Yeah.
In my world, there are actually things bigger than me, even there. And one of them happens to be the San Francisco Giants. In the playoffs, and when that's going on,
playoffs.
We're talking about practice. When the Giants are in the playoffs, everything else in my life tends to suddenly become irrelevant.
Try to be a parent.
Yeah, suddenly
it's hard
to
make your children irrelevant, but it's pretty tough. Yeah.
So, well, you see, what you can do as a parent though is you can bring them into mm-hmm. that mindset. You can say, "Look, school." Not that important right now, guys.
That's right.
Game is at 10 a.m., so you're going to have to call in sick that day. I actually did get sick, luckily, during a 1 o'clock. Actually, my work let me go to watch the 1 o'clock game. Oh, no, sorry, 2:30, was it? 2:07, something like that?
Yeah.
Work let me go to that game. But then I got sick that night. I could feel it coming, but I was hoping that it wasn't going to happen. And then I think the celebrating and the drinking just brought it on, you know.
That just lowered the shield. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, then thankfully, because of me being sick, I was able to watch the next two games comfortably. Comfortably from my home without having to worry about missing work and stuff because I was already going to miss anyway. So let's just bring everybody up to speed, by the way, on what the hell I'm talking about. So the Giants... We did an episode after we won the West, right?
No, we didn't. That's the whole thing. The last episode we did was the bonus-ode after we did the press box.
After the press box.
That was still a couple of days before they clinched the West. Okay. So, we did not get a chance to do a preview of the NLDS or anything like that. And, man, obviously the way this NLDS was going, I didn't think we were going to have another postseason a preview, obviously.
Yeah. It seemed like we were going to have to do
a post-mortem podcast.
Exactly, yeah, post-mortem. That was pretty much what I thought was coming. Well, actually, I'll say this. I didn't think it was coming necessarily. I mean, obviously, we weren't feeling very good about our chances, but I'll get more into that in a second. But so let's talk about clinching first. We clinched with plenty of time to go, and the very next day was the final home game of the season, Fan Appreciation Day. And Bruce Bochy decides to play all second stringers, basically. Just sits all the starters down and gets to do what a manager gets to do in that situation. So now when we get to the playoffs, we lose two games at home. Do you feel like they were a little flat due to the clinching so early? Do you think that was actually a detriment coming into the playoffs?
I think it can be, absolutely.
Do you
and
think
I don't know
was
if it was
in this situation, though. I mean,
yeah,
it seemed like they were
it's
flat
hard to say because
in.
After that, you know, they went back on the road and obviously played the Dodgers in the last three, and they played those hard, you know. So, I mean, it was very competitive. They didn't want the Dodgers to get in the playoffs, and they eliminated them on the second to the last day of the season. So, I mean, they definitely had something to play for, but yeah, they just came in flat. I mean, I was at the Saturday night game, And it, you know, it wasn't pretty, and Sunday was even worse.
Yeah.
So I can't say that it actually contributed to it. But look at the Cardinals. You know, they had to fight all the way down the stretch, had a one game elimination game, and, you know, came back in this series. So there is something to be said about having that momentum going in, and maybe the mindset of just always being under that pressure. Look what the Giants did in 2010. They clinched on the last day of the season.
Clinched on the last day of the season and never lost the first game in the playoffs. Never
exactly.
Lost.
They were 11-4 in the playoffs. I mean, they just rolled. Yeah. So
now, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter what your overall record is as long as you get to that 11 wins. But, you know, we could say that the Giants looked flat for sure in those first two games. And I don't know necessarily. A lot of people after the first two games, and I'll get into this a little bit more at some point, but a lot of people said that, oh, the Giants looked good against bad teams, and this actually isn't a good team. Only after we lose those first two games, by the way. Nobody was saying this after we clinched.
No, of course not.
But as soon as we lose two games to the Reds, everyone's saying, I knew it the whole time. The Giants were only playing the Padres and the Rockies and all these horrible teams, and they weren't going up against good teams like the Reds, so they weren't being tested. And this team was flawed from the beginning. Now, when we clinched and we were headed into the playoffs, was that a concern for you? Did you feel like this team hasn't been tested and now we're going to have to play some quality competition?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
My concern was more like position by position. I was a little concerned about left field with Blanco and concerned about the closer because, you know, it was Romo Lopez hybrid. So.
Yeah, it's the closer by committee still. Yeah. And we're still rolling with that.
No, I didn't think they were going to have a tough time against a better team. I didn't think anything like that. They can beat anyone. It's just a matter of getting hot.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I did have, you know, they went down 0-2 and I was staying positive and I was like, you know what? If any team can do it, this team can because they played so well on the road. They scored more runs on the road. They had their record was pretty much exactly the same as at home, but it was well over 500. And I had a friend at my daughter's school, who's a diehard Reds fan. He grew up in Ohio, and he's wearing his Reds gear all day. He was a real nice guy, though. He wasn't like, you know, suck it. You know, we took the first two or anything like that. But I was like, dude, tell your guys to back off. And this is right after the 2-0 lead, and they whipped the Giants 9-0. He's like, that looked pretty good. He's all, but I don't know, man. I was like, what do you mean you don't know? You have to win 1 out of 3 at home. How hard is that? The Giants are hitting like 0-70 or something like that in the first
game. We basically had a perfect game being thrown against us for about 6 innings there. I mean, yeah, we looked bad.
Either it was something he knew or the pessimism in him. But there was a little bit of optimism in me. And I tell you, when they got back into that third game, I mean, I was certain they were going to lose that. They were also being no hit. They had one hit through 9 innings.
We had one hit through 9 innings. And but they had were tied, run. Though.
But they were tied. Yeah. So they went to extra innings. And I actually went to the A's game that night and was in the suite. And I was with a couple of other diehard Giants fans. And there was no A's game watching for us. We were just glued to the television for the 9th and 10th. And when they pulled that one out, that's one of those, you know, torture games, back to the torture. And it was like, you know, they pulled it out. That gives them a little bit of momentum. Maybe that'll wake up their bats. And that is exactly what happened in Game 4. I mean, exactly. And then once you do that, once you kind of get over that hump, then, you know, the pressure's all on the Reds. I mean, they were feeling it. They were playing like scared little turtles on Game 5. And I think the Giants were playing like they had nothing to lose because they came back from the brink.
Well,
and that's exactly what happened.
It was funny because we go down 0-2, but not only do we go down 0-2, the games weren't even competitive, really. The first game was competitive for a while, but it was like slowly the Reds just kind of pulled away.
Yeah, they put a couple more in the 9th and put it up 5-0.
Yeah, and then and the thing is that, you know, we had a big break for us, you know, go our way in that first game with Cueto going down. And we weren't able to take advantage of that, you know. So me as a Giants fan, I even tweeted about that. I said, now this becomes a must-win game. When their ace goes down, you have to consider that we have to. It's like when you foul a ball off and the guy drops it going into the stands and he doesn't make the play. Okay, well, now it's time to hit a double down the line, you know? it was one of those types of feelings. It was, okay, their ace just went down after 8 pitches, and now they're going to have to turn this entire game into a bullpen game, which is going to hurt them in the long run, too, just because of the fact that they're going to have to get innings out of all these guys. So I'm thinking we got to pull this win out. You know, Dusty's going to have to dig deep to try to get, you know, this first game for his team, and then we lose that game. So, you know, that's a pretty big blow. The second game, losing 9-0, almost felt like we had gotten sucker punched in that first game, you know, by not winning. So the thing is that it, to me, felt even more demoralizing just in the fashion that we lost those two games. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
If we had lost two competitive games where we had a chance in the ninth inning to win both games, you know, then I would have felt like, all right, well, you know, we just got edged out, basically. But the way we lost those games really demoralized everybody. And SF Gate comments really reflected that. I mean, everybody was, this season's over. That's it. I knew it the whole time. This team is crap. By the way, is Ben Lee here?
We have him.
I was just going to ask to jump in on that, actually.
What's up, Ben? Welcome, by the way, to episode 39, the Roberto Kelly episode, which, by the way, we all know Roberto Kelly was the key to this turnaround in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Right? All right. Yeah. Good.
Hey, we got to get a full report from Ben.
That's right. Yeah.
Experience at Parks.
Whatever I'm still awake for, right?
So, my point being that, you know, everybody in San Francisco was extra down because of how we lost those games, except for the Giants, apparently. Except the Giants apparently were not. They went in knowing what they had to do and knowing that they just had to win one game. And, you know, I was saying it too. All you got to do is win Tuesday. All you got to do is win Wednesday. Well, now all you got to do is win Thursday. You know, I mean, that's all you had to do, right? And they pulled it off. So kudos to those guys for not losing the faith like a bunch of the fan base apparently did. And Ben, you got to see the players come in last night. What was the mood?
I got to go with exhausted.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it. Okay, so originally it sounded like they were going to be landing at about 2:30 was really kind of the thing. And credit to at 1SF Giant on Twitter for trying to kind of organize and make this thing happen. It sort of happened. There were probably about 25, maybe 30 of us when the buses finally pulled in, because they finally pulled in at about 5:15 this morning.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Ouch.
Yeah. I haven't slept since about 9 a.m. yesterday.
Okay.
So I'll be real interesting today. That's for me.
I'm sure you will. So who did you end up seeing? Who got off the bus?
You know, a lot of the guys went straight to their cars and just took off, and I don't blame them. I mean, we all kind of knew they were going to be exhausted. We just kind of wanted to be there for moral support. Nobody was asking for autographs. Nobody was, you know, obviously. The only people who are crazy enough to be out there at 5 in the morning are the ones who are just there trying to make sure that the team knows they're welcome back.
Yeah. Well, that you guys, I got to say, the entire team has been talking about how the fans have not stopped supporting them. And to see guys out there at 5 in the morning waiting for them, they got to know how important this team is to this city.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I think that the guy who enjoyed it the most was Larry Bear, because he was one of the first ones off the bus.
Nice.
And just got this rousing cheer from all the fans that were there. And he actually came over, gave a couple of handshakes, said, "You guys are great." You know, it was really expressed how happy he was that we were there. A lot of the players were clearly very tired, piled straight into their cars. A lot of the cars shot out. Hunter Pence shot out like a rocket, which is kind of what he does all the time. But apparently it's also what he does when he's trying to drive home after he's been up for God knows how many hours on a plane.
And I'm sure he hustles every moment of his life. I mean, that guy doesn't.
He does. Based on how he drives, he hustles there too. It's very impressive. We got a wave from Barry Zito as he was driving out. The biggest thing, I think, Bruce Bochy came by, passed out some high fives, clearly was in a pretty good mood himself, despite the fact that he was clearly also very tired. And Mike Kruko, really, he came by and, you know, gave some thanks, waved, came back to get a couple some more of his stuff with his wife and his dog, and on his way out one last time, some fist pounds for the fans that were there, saying, "You guys are awesome, you know, thank you for being here." Just as usual, Mike Kruko being a class act.
Yeah, Mike Kruko's the man.
Yeah,
he really is. They're all great.
If anybody out there has the ability or the technology to do it, listen to the KMBR broadcast instead of TBS, because I've been doing that. When I was lucky enough to be at home watching the games, and it's a much better experience. Takes a little bit of time syncing things up, but oh my God, hearing announcers who actually know what the hell is going on is a huge difference in the experience of watching the game. So if you have the MLB app, it actually works perfect because it's not ahead like normal radio. so you can actually take your DVR and just pause it for a second and then like wait and just try to get caught up. So,
oh, there you go. Yeah, I got the Epbat app. I didn't even think about doing it that way.
Yeah, do it that way because it actually takes a second to buffer and all that, and you end up being pretty close. So the trick for me was to wait for a pitch to go in, like for somebody to either foul it off or to hit the glove, pause it at that very moment,
and then wait for the sound,
and then just click play. And if you just kind of time it just right, all of a sudden you're synced up perfectly.
Oh, cool.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Nice.
So much better. Well, Ben, I got to give you super props for going out and sticking it out and waiting until 5 a.m. That's really awesome. So you also met some Twitter followers of ours or Twitter friends of ours. You want to give any shout-outs to them?
Yeah. There were a few that made it. A couple people that I hadn't actually met before, which is pretty cool, at SF Giants Girl, at Legal 88. A couple of the ones that we sort of interact with, W Coast Fangirl, and I'm totally going to mangle their usernames, but Ashley and Mac, two people that we interact with on our Twitter sometimes, that also kind of, I got to meet up with them for a little bit. Mac actually made it out at like 5 in the morning with me, and we were just kind of waiting there to see the Giants come back in, provide a little bit of support, and I'd say a familiar face, but none of them have any idea who we are. Although Mac has an awesome orange sign that says Opa Gamer Babe style, which is signed by Brian Sabian. So there was that. I mean, all in all, it was one of those things where it's just like, you're there because you feel some driving need to connect with this team and to kind of be supportive for the moments that you've gotten to share with them, whether or not they know who you are, whether or not they recognize your faces. Really doesn't, it's not important at that point. Cause I mean, for me, you know, there were a couple people there that I've seen on Twitter, and they're the type that get really excitable, and there's all exclamation points when they talk about the team and like baseball emojis and stuff. And that's awesome because every team has to have that for energy. I admit that I'm one of those more cynical tweeters. I do a lot of trolling. I write a lot in all caps. I make a lot of jokes about how the Giants' greatest weakness is pitchers that throw balls. But, you know, you felt it being out there. Even though there were only a few of us, you kind of got that people were there to cheer and make noise and make the guys feel like they were back home. And even though it was really early in the morning, I feel like we got to do that. And hopefully all of them appreciated it, even though it was, you know, there were a lot of really screamy girls and a lot of real high pitched, Bruce, Bochy, Bruce. It's one of those things that just like, it seems different at 5 in the morning, and I'll admit it too, but it was really, it's pretty incredible to be around, to see people have that much energy at 5 in the morning, having been waiting for these team buses to roll in for forever and a half, not knowing when exactly the plane was landing. It was pretty awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, let's talk about how the Giants were able to pull this damn thing off, because this was historic, basically. I mean, there's no other way to put it. No team had been down 0-2 and had to go play the next three games on the road, and no NL team had been down 0-2, period, and come back.
That's right.
True. But no Major League baseball team had been down 0-2 and had to go play three on the road. So,
Well, and I hate to be the voice of reason here, but that's because the division series has never started.
Well, absolutely. True.
So there is that.
But the thing is the deck was stacked against the Giants in a way that had never been stacked against any team who had to do this before.
Which is strangely kind of familiar territory for us in a way.
I guess so. Yeah. So
not as much as the Cardinals, I'll say that. So,
well,
credit
Chad,
for that.
How do you feel? What was it that, like, how was it that we were so different in games 3, 4, and 5 than we were in games 1 and 2?
You know, I was reading a lot of the Reds fans blogs and comment sites and fan sites, and one of the things that they kept harping on is, I don't understand. The Reds out-hit the Giants. They out-pitched the Giants. All the stats were better, and they still lost. How the hell did that happen? And I'm not going to say it's intangibles, but I think it's just timing. You know, like we were talking about earlier, we have game 3. They have one hit through 9 innings. Well, that contributes a lot to your lower batting average.
Sure.
But they manufacture that run with the error and the sack fly and all that.
Well, hit by pitch,
and they go to extra innings.
Hit by pitch, walk, sack. Wait, what was it? Hit by pitch, walk, wild pitch, sacrifice.
Sack bunt, sack fly.
Thank you.
So it's one of those, you know, scoring without a hit kind of plays. And then in 10th inning, they get two hits and, things work out for them on that hopper by Arias to Roland, and they hold on. So little things like that, I mean, that's a huge game swing right there. So I think stats in a five-game series, I'm not going to say you can throw them out the window, but when you have a lot anomalies like this, you can. But like we were saying earlier, you win that first game, and then suddenly you realize, well, we only have to win one more to be tied. That's not that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's and again, it's a cliche, but one game at a time, one game at a time, when you really break it down like that, that's you know what I think the players felt like, and obviously Hunter Pence had something to do with that, jacked him up, which is a little unusual for a baseball team.
Sure, usually well, you're not only that, but
you're not running out of the tunnel, get ready to tear the quarterback's head off in baseball. So it's
a midseason trade too. I mean, it wasn't like he was the leader all year. You know, he just.
This isn't like this is Posey giving the speech, and that's really not his thing either.
Yeah, well, that would have been even more ridiculous. That Posey giving a speech, I don't know if that'll ever happen. But, I mean, it was definitely weird. I mean, Pence, not only that, hadn't really played very well since coming to the team, you know?
Nah, so, he hit 219 with the Giants.
Yeah, so he, I think maybe he just decided to just put it on his, you know, put something on his shoulders and say, look, if I'm not going to play well, I can do something for this team. And, you know, and I'm not blaming
speaker.
Him. Yeah. I'm not blaming him for not playing well. I don't think the guy, you know, I think he got a little unlucky. I think there was a lot of hard hit balls that just kind of went at people for him, you know.
They just found gloves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of strikeouts, too. I mean, he's kind of a free swinger and he tends to strike out, but.
He definitely has been, you know, so is Pablo, and we sort of, you have to take the good with the bad sometimes, and we need the good to have some good timing, and he definitely had a couple of timely moments. Certainly that walk that he took was a real big one in kind of advancing everybody forward. And when we manage to score, you know, Posey gets on base, Pence gets on base, and that's how we finally end up.
That's how we win game three. Yeah,
exactly.
Pence doesn't get on base there, and we don't win that game. So
yeah, so I mean, it's I wouldn't say he's contributed as much as the rest of the lineup by a long shot, but you know, every Giants fan still loves Hunter Pence, and it's not just because of the speeches. We can tell that he's still working really hard.
Well, in the play in right field too, and that's very
absolutely.
Same game, so
yeah, absolutely.
You know, without him, we don't win that game. So, you know, regardless of the speech, he went out and he backed it up with his play. So, I mean, Ben, like Chad brought up a good point. The stats were in favor of the Reds when you look at it overall. What do you think was the key to the Giants turning this thing around and being able to pull off three in a row?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, there was sort of this. I feel like in game two, there was sort of a moment where it got so bad that you could see the team kind of just deflated. And it doesn't necessarily mean they were giving up, but just like that will to swing just kind of got sucked out of them and out of the, you know, out of the fans, out of the park, all of it. And I think that what really kind of hit is in game three. I don't know if it's because they got fired up or if it's just because they felt like Homer Bailey should be more hittable than this. I don't know, but there was something in the way that they took their at bats, in the way that they went after guys, that just didn't feel the same. It didn't feel like they were folding. You had this feeling that if the pitching could go out and just keep it close. And I actually think no matter what you say, Bochy, I think, did a really good job working with the bullpen.
Oh, absolutely.
And managing out of the bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. Did. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I still am not sure about how I feel about the decision to start Zito, but I can't really blame him for it based on how Zito had been pitching. But
we won the game, right? So that's 12 starts in a row where Zito starts and we win. So
that's right.
It's hard to argue with that.
And when you put it that way, we've already established that we're not arguing because or despite. So we're just going to run with sure 12. Yeah, last 12 was one.
Two and a third. Good job.
Start Zito every game and then pull him immediately. And
yeah, we let him pitch to one guy.
Yeah,
and pull him out.
There were definitely those moments though where you know, you start wondering if somebody's being left in just a little too long, and then Bochy would come out, he'd make the switch. And the next guy that would come in just wants to pick up the guy before. It's the same thing we started seeing with the bullpen in 2010. The next guy knows, you know, if something happens, the next guy behind me is going to bail me out. And the guys really, I think, the pitching, I think, had a huge, huge part in keeping us in, because those moments when the hitting was faltering, you could still see they were taking good at-bats because they always felt like they were still in it. And every time they felt like they were still in it, one of the relievers would come out and would pitch one hell of an inning. Whether they let a couple guys on base or what, they would just pitch one hell of an inning to make sure that the guys were still in it.
Yeah.
And I think that in this case, I almost feel like this series, so much of it has to do with Vogelsong and Lincecum in the bullpen.
Vogelsong's start was clutch, and Vogelsong really had to, you know, pitch well.
Vogelsong was
three
the game
games.
Three guy. He really didn't have it. He didn't have any other option. He had to
pitch an amazing start, but he earned that start with his last three starts of the season, basically.
Absolutely.
Because he battled like crazy, and even though he wasn't as sharp as he was early on, he proved that he wasn't dead. I mean, I think right now Bumgarner might be a little bit dead-armed. Vogelsong may have been, but he's not now, and he definitely looked sharp. And I think the key for Vogelsong also was I noticed that he wasn't shaking off a lot of pitches, and he was throwing a lot more than just his fastball, which he sometimes gets a little bit married to the fastball, and basically
he spots it so well, like he'll start sticking to it. But
what happens though is then he makes a mistake with it, and,
right.
and he gets hit like crazy, because if you leave it a little over the plate and a hitter knows it's a fastball and isn't having to think about any other pitches, a little tiny location mistake, doesn't even have to be a big one, doesn't have to be a fat pitch, could be just a little bit, catches too much of the plate, suddenly that's a rope, you know what I mean? And he mixed his pitches up well. You know, he kept them at one run, and once the Giants tied the game and took the lead, we never trailed again.
Well,
in the
when you look back at that, yeah, how critical that was that Vogelsong did not fold. And I know he's a he's an animal. He's a caged animal.
Look at the man's nostrils next time he's pitching.
Yeah, he's not going to back down from a challenge at all. I'm not concerned about that. But he had a very rough first inning.
Yeah,
and he'd already allowed a run in, and he had a couple runners on base with one out. He could have collapsed, and Reds could have scored three or four runs.
I almost thought he might get pulled.
That would have been the end of the series. Right,
they had bullpen activity. You know what I mean? That early in the game, and he, you know, we all said if he doesn't calm down quick, he's getting yanked right now.
But look at that, he calmed down. He didn't allow a hit after the first inning. He pitched five, held him to one run, and that was crucial because they needed only one run to be able to be tied to go into extra innings to win it. So
yeah, absolutely. But I think we got to say that the starting pitching was not the reason that the Giants were able to take this one. Obviously, Vogelsong's start was big, but
Zito was shaky. Kane was shaky.
You really got to look. I mean, Kane, no starter gave us, and as crappy the qualifications are of a quality start, no single starter gave us one of those. So really, I think the entire bullpen put this team on their backs in this series. And said, no, we're not, get us a few innings, and we'll take care of the rest. And they really did that. And then, you got to give Bochy credit. He does seem to find that time. Every time he leaves somebody in and you think maybe this is one too many batters, there's always a reason for it, Baker later on, and we'll talk about this in our Armchair Manager segment, said that he was leaving Latos in because his stuff was still good. Not because of a matchup, not because of history. Mm-hmm. Oh, his stuff is still good, but we all saw it, right? We all saw Latos falling apart. Bochy has solid reasons for when he pulls guys and when he leaves guys in. And we all thought
I was shocked. I mean, here they are, they're already down 2-0.
Yeah.
He reloads the bases with one out. It's in the fifth inning.
Yeah.
You're in a do or die game. Why the hell are you leaving him in?
No, absolutely. When Bochy left Kane in, we all thought Kane in game five, he's leaving him in a little bit too long, right? Like we were all thinking, it's time to pull him. He's losing it. He had solid reasons for leaving him in for those guys because of matchup purposes and things like that. And he was waiting to get to the lefty to pull him. He's got different reasoning than Dusty's more of a player's manager guy. And Bruce is a player's manager as well. But he's also a by-the-book guy where it's like, I'm looking at matchups, I'm looking at histories, and I'm making the decisions based on those things and what my guy's doing. Is my guy leaving the ball up? Okay, he's got to get out of there. Has Zito walked four already? He's out. Baker tends to leave things in a little too long, and we know this as Giants fans.
Just
know the history, yeah. Or pull them out early just to celebrate. You know what I mean? Things like that. These are not the reasons to make pitching changes. And I gotta give it up to Bruce Bochy for being a guy who just has conviction. And he goes out there and he makes a decision, and he's got a reason for it, and he sticks with it. And you can't go back and really question him as much as you can other managers we've had in the past. So, all right. So let's talk about the upcoming. Let's talk about the upcoming series. Obviously, this was an amazing series, and I would like to say just now on record, I called it. You can look at my friend Sean's Facebook message. He said, the last time the Giants lost game one of a five-game series or something like that, and then won, was 1921 or something. And I wrote, and this is after game one, I wrote, and the next time will be 2012 versus the Cincinnati Reds. So, there you go. I called it. All right, let's move on to the next series.
I thought you were just going to say something like, do. Pull a little Mike Kruko.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's due.
Yeah, he's due.
They're due.
Well, we're due.
They're due.
Let's talk about this upcoming series against the Cardinals real quick before we move on to some of the other segments here, because I know we don't have a lot of time. Just real quick, Chad, pick, you know, give me your thoughts on it. Who do you think is going to win this thing? Are you picking the Giants? What's going on here?
I'm picking the Giants.
Okay.
Good for I you. Am.
I think we're probably all...
Back that up.
Spoiler alert. I think we might all pick the Giants.
Oh, wait. No. Hold on. You don't know.
No, yeah. I think the Giants woke up. I really do. Okay. I'm not saying I don't think Hunter Pence is going to do his pregame talk, although you never know, right?
They were wearing the same. Now. Yeah, he
well, the
to.
Team was wearing the same clothes too. I don't think they're going to be wearing the same clothes for, you know, a week straight.
Well, I am.
Even Romo was saying that his stuff was getting funky, but he was still doing it. Beyond that, I just think that they woke up. I think they woke up. I think they're going to have a better mentality for playing at home starting tomorrow night. They have been playing so flat, really, the whole second half at home, and they open up the series like this. I just think things are going to click a little bit differently for them.
Okay.
The thing that scares me, and it's not the Cards statistically, I don't think their pitching's better than the Giants. I don't think their hitting's better than the Giants. That's not it at all. It's whatever moxie they have, you know, continuing from last year's World Series, actually from the playoffs where they overcame Atlanta
from the
Braves.
Regular season.
In the regular season after that collapse, they sneak in as wild card, you know, run through the table and are down to their last strike against the Rangers two times.
Mm-hmm.
And they still somehow pulled it out. This year, same thing. They sneak in as the second wild card, which is kind of funny because with the old system, they would have been eliminated. The poor Braves. I hate the Braves, but I do feel sorry for them. This is one of the reasons I don't like the second wild card. Last year,
I hate the Braves, but I'm pro Chipper Jones, the final year narrative.
That's right.
So.
That's right. But the Braves would have obviously gone in into the wild card last year with this new system, but they didn't. They collapsed. The Cards beat them by one. This year, the Cards are the ones that finished behind the Braves, but six games,
but
by
again,
the way, behind the Braves. But
the Braves have to feel screwed right now.
They go into the Braves.
All it takes is some poor hitting and an infield fly. So.
Well, yeah, the infield fly rule was ridiculous.
Throwing it into right field.
Too. Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't just that. Yeah, it was, you know, it was chip is there, the lack of hitting. But
they're losing at that point.
That infield fly just kind of like, it's like adding insult to insult.
Well, but it's like the Bartman thing to me, that infield fly. It's like, let's just blame it on this thing that happened while all these other things happened.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? It's you can't pick that one.
You can't. Just like you can't pin like any part of the Nats Cards game on any one person there either. Like everybody wants to pin it on Drew Storen, but you know,
no, you can't. No, absolutely.
There's a lot that went on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last night, you know, they're down 6-0. Funny, the Giants were up 6-0 and they almost blew the same lead. Which it would have been the first team to blow that large of a postseason.
As soon as it got to 6-4, everybody started thinking itself felt awfully familiar and getting a little worried. And then as soon as it went to 6-5, everybody was like, never mind, this is totally different. We're okay. No more flashbacks. I'm good. I'm good.
They have some ability to just keep coming back. They are they're like a cockroach, the St. Louis Cockroaches. I mean, they cannot be crushed. And so even if the Giants dominate this series, you just kind of are afraid that little intangible that might come out in, you know, one or two games that swings the difference. But beyond something crazy like that happening, a 6-run comeback, you know, I think the Giants have a superior team.
Okay. Ben, Chad, give me number of games. Giants and how many?
I think Giants and 6.
Okay. Ben, what do you say?
I do think that the starting pitching is going to pick up a bit. I do think the hitting is going to pick up a little at home, but of course we're setting the bar really low here. So, which we do sometimes. It's nice to be able to start by disappointing you and then make you feel better later than have you get disappointed when we don't hit later. I definitely think we're going to hit better. I think that we're going to see the Cardinals pitching better because I don't feel like the Cardinals do have some strong pitchers for sure, especially towards their back end. Sean Marshall, they've definitely got a couple of guys that are real solid. And I mean, we are going to be facing, you know, Adam Wainwright, who has proven hittable, but also can be pretty devastating. And we definitely have our mixed results with devastating pitchers sometimes. So it's going to be a question of which Giants show up. But I think that these Giants now have some of the confidence that maybe we weren't seeing at the end of the season when they got to coast a little bit into the playoffs. We sort of this time there was no, 162 bulletin board material. Here comes Matt Latos. Jonathan Sanchez hits a triple stuff. This time it was really like, hey, we clinched early. Let's just watch the Dodgers collapse themselves into a black hole as we try and see where we're going to end up in the standings. And we coasted into the division series a little bit, not knowing what we were going to get. And I think every Giants fan went into this series kind of like, oh gosh, who's going to show up? What is it going to be like? And the first two games did not go so great. Now I think they've really kind of established more how they're handling things, what they're going to be doing, how this team is playing. They're developing a little bit of a playoff identity on how the 2012 team is different from the 2010 team. And I think that that's going to lead to them coming into this series going, you know what, we know who we are. We know what we're capable of. No, there isn't really going to be any doubt this time. And so if somebody does start to shut them down, I think that these guys are now going to be a lot more resilient because they've already proven that they can do it three times in a row.
So how many games?
I think it's going to be pretty close. I'm actually going to go ahead and say Giants take it in six.
Okay. I also already called six, and I'm going to say six because the Reds were a better pitching team than the Cardinals are. The Cardinals are probably the best offensive team in the National League, though, and that does worry me. However, the Giants have, potentially the best staff. And while we didn't do that, we had a down season from Timmy. We had Vogelsong fall off in the second half. We had Bumgarner have some struggles towards the end of the season. We also still kept a lot of the magic going throughout the year. Zito had a much better season than anybody expected. I think the Giants still do have a far superior starting four, and a superior bullpen. And even without a closer that we know we have the best closer I think that you can have by having a closer by committee. And, it just means that you can mix and match. You don't have to just live or die by one guy and if he's having an off day. So I honestly think the Giants pitching beats the Cardinals hitting. I do think the Cardinals will have some magic moments in this series.
Definitely.
And I don't think you can really stop that. But the thing is, there is at some point, there is going to be a hangover from this for the Cardinals and their fans. You can't just party like this all day and all night. And when you wake up the next day and you try to do it again, I think you fall a little short. And basically what you can compare this season to is the second day after a massive party, and they're trying to do it again. They're trying to go all night again. And I don't think they're going to make it. I think at some point they're going to pass out in the corner, and it's going to have been too much. someone's going to yak, and then they're going to be like, oh, I'm trying to boot and rally, and it's not going to work. So.
Somebody just ends up passing out on the couch.
Exactly.
Cardinals and wakes up the next morning and doesn't remember where they are and how they got there.
And we wrote cock on their faces. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So Cardinals are going down in six. And they're going to have the word cock written on their faces. All right. So let's.
Speaking of.
they're a kind of bird.
I'm talking about a rooster. Yeah, no. A male rooster, dude.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, of course. What else are you talking about?
So, we face a lot of red birds. I'm getting confused about which one is which. All right.
Lincecum, should he be a starter? This is the big question for this series. I tend to think that he worked out pretty damn well out of the bullpen, but it's really hard to now say that we're not going to give him a chance as a starter. Obviously he took to that role. He did what he needed to do for the team, and he excelled in that role. And it's actually a pretty damn good weapon to be able to say that if any of my starters falter, I can go straight to Tim Lincecum. That's a pretty solid thing to have in your back pocket. However, I think Bruce Bochy recognizes that Timmy wants to start, has two Cy Youngs, has really good playoff history now, and deserves to start. So I think Lincecum does become – I even think he may be the third game starter.
I think Kane's going to go game three.
You think so?
Yeah, because they want to line him up for a potential
game seven. That's true,
for a potential game seven.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's Bum Vogie Kane is what I'm, or Vogie Bum Kane, I think.
Okay. And it'll be on his normal rest, too. That wouldn't be short.
Now, if Lincecum is the game four starter, could we potentially see him in game one if Bumgarner falters?
I think that's not out of the question, especially in a relatively shorterly stint. You know, Tim's got a rubber arm. He's worked on short rest before. It's one of the reasons they hesitated with Matt is that he's never really pitched on short rest. And I think it's they're not likely to try and break that now unless there's an emergency. You know, we get into a game six, game seven situation. Maybe you see him come out of the bullpen. But
that first relief stint he had in game, was it one or two in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Wow.
In game two, where there was that mass confusion about
he didn't know if he was coming in or not.
Yeah.
Well, he stood down there on the pen and just was talking to Gardner, and he never threw. And so he went back in the dugout. Yeah, he
threw a little bit, but it was like one or two, barely.
Oh, that's right.
Barely.
But it wasn't from the mound. It wasn't full. It was just
It was like long toss.
Yeah. And so he realizes, you know, he's in. He's kind of pissed. He's kind of flustered. He grabs his glove and he goes out, takes his 8 standard warm-up pitches and goes. So they were talking to Boesky about that afterwards.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you know, he has a rubber arm. There was some confusion there. And Timmy had a brain cramp and didn't realize with the hitters that he was actually going to be in the game. He actually thought he was going to be out and not get in. So he had a bit of a brain cramp, but he got in there and he said he had a rubber arm and obviously pitched well. And then after they clinched, he was on Tom and Eric, their show, Eric Burns, on KNBR. And they're asking him, so, hey, you know, Timmy pitched pretty well. Is there any way that he's not going to be a starter? I think Bochy had a little bit of beer and champagne in him because he was pretty elated at the time because I've never seen him sound that high or hear him sound that high. But he's like, oh, yeah, definitely. I think Timmy's earned it, and we're going to meet. We're definitely going to find a spot in the rotation for him. I mean, so just an hour after they clinched, he's basically saying absolutely.
Yeah, he's already saying yes.
And it's going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. This is why I'm saying, will we see him in game one? Because of the fact that if he's the game four starter, that could potentially be the only time we see him in a 7-game series if we don't find another place for him. I don't think that it's completely out of the question for him to throw a couple innings in game one and potentially even a couple innings in game seven if needed, if he's the game four starter. And, you know, and we all know that starters are going to have a short leash regardless. So in game four, I don't expect him to go much longer than 6, no matter how well he pitches, you know. And so I think we could see him used in all roles throughout this series. So it'll be real interesting to see what Bochy actually does now that he's not high anymore. But, I have a feeling we will see him start. All right, let's play armchair manager before Chad has to get out of here. We got about 10 minutes or so before Chad has to jet. So I personally tweeted out that I thought that we're going to play armchair manager for another manager, by the way, for Dusty Baker here. I personally thought Dusty Baker made 2 critical mistakes in the 5th game. First was the double steal. Now, the situation at that time is they were down 6-3. There's one out. No, there was no outs, right?
Nobody out.
Runners on first and second.
3-2 count.
You got Hannigan at the plate, who is a contact guy. He doesn't strike out a lot. But you don't have speed on the bases. So
yeah, Jay Bruce.
So if a guy doesn't make contact there, you're pretty much hanging your guy out to dry at third base. You've got
Posey behind the plate, who you know has a cannon for an arm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, Bruce is relatively quick, but he ain't that quick. You know, we're not talking like Coco Crisp here.
Yeah. Now the one thing to look at though here is you have Kane on the mound and not someone like Lincecum, who's a strikeout pitcher. You know, I mean, Kane does strike people out, but not at the rate that someone like Lincecum does. He's known as a fly ball pitcher. You know, he gets people to put the ball in play. However, in that situation, they ran on the first pitch. Fouled off, right? So Kane knows that they're going to be running. So Kane can go for a strikeout pitch there. You know, if you do walk this guy, you're ending up with bases loaded, nobody out, but you're going towards the back of the order. You still have a 3-run lead. I personally just think that the running them there was the wrong move. I understand doing that in maybe a 1-run or a 2-run game, because then you suddenly move if it works. Let's say he hits a ball on the ground. You move both runners into scoring position. In a 2-run game, that means a base hit would score both of them and tie the game. In a 3-run game, even if you move them both up into scoring position, a base hit does not tie the game. You're still down. I say you don't run into outs, and you give yourself a shot at the 3-run bomb, which is something that the Reds can do. So let's start with you, Ben. What did you think of this move? Did you think this was the right thing to do?
You know... I don't know that Hannigan's not a bad hitter. I don't know if he's the first guy that I would try and tag for a hit and run. the same thing time, you know, I'd have to look up what Hannigan's strikeout stats are. I mean, there are definitely other guys.
But he's not a big strikeout guy. He doesn't strike out a lot. That's
yeah,
sure.
There's a lot of other guys on the Red who are much more likely to strike out than he is. Just kind of that high risk, high reward, swing for the fences type approach.
But what does he gain from this is my question, really. I mean, like, let's say everything works out perfectly. Hannigan slaps one through a hole, right? Mm. What does he really get? Like, that would be, like, the best case scenario in that situation. What would happen? He would score one, get a guy to third, so it'd be first and third with nobody out?
I mean, I think I'm trying to remember who was it. Bruce was on second. I'm trying to remember who was on first. I just blanked out for a second there.
And not speed, but you know the throw's not going to second anyway. So that's right. Speed of first base doesn't really matter. It doesn't come into play as much.
Right, but if somebody's going to get the hit, the question is, like, do you have enough speed for them to get from first to third? Are you scoring one run and putting another guy in third with a guy on first? You know, it's, I mean, that hit and run, you're not just talking stay out of a double play at that point, although that's certainly going to be part of it. You're if you're with zero outs, you're really starting a double steal in the hopes that it's either going to be a hit and run successful or that it's going to be a steal successful. And I think we can say pretty safely that, especially after doing it once, having it fouled off and having Kane know that it's coming, it's not going to be a successful steal. So I'm thinking the goal was to Hannigan have... It's one of those hit and runs where you kind of expect a hit to come out of it, not just bat on ball.
I mean, I think he expected him to put the ball in the play. But, I mean, obviously, but you know, I just feel like
it doesn't,
he
doesn't necessarily seem like a well-informed.
He raised the percentage of a double play in my eyes, because to get a double play, you know, to get a double play is a very specific thing that has to happen: a ball on the ground to a fielder quickly, right? I mean, you're not going to get a double play on a slow ground ball. You're not going to get a double play on a fly ball. You're not going to get a double play on a line drive. You're not going to get, you know, well, you can't.
The idea, though, you start the runners early. It's a much lower chance that you're going to be able to throw the ball to second before they get there if they're already, you know, more than halfway there.
No, but you open up a new potential for a double play. And if the guy strikes out, a definite double play. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Putting the ball on the ground to an infielder is a very specific set of circumstances that have to happen. He could easily hit a fly ball, you know. He could do anything, any number of things when he hits the ball. So to me, it's just, I don't like that play unless you've got speed on the base paths and you're only down by the two runs that are on base.
I don't think you could fault Dusty Baker if it was the first time he tried it on that 3-2 pitch.
Sure, sure, yeah, okay.
But the fact is, you know, he did try it on the first or second pitch. So you already have Kane and Posey alerted to the possibility that's going to happen again.
Posey knows it's happening, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, Posey might be a little bit less flat-footed because he probably wasn't even thinking about those guys going, you know, first. But boom, they go, and he's like, oh, crap, well, you know, it's possible on a two-strike pitch here.
It's because at first he was like, why would you possibly send them on this count?
On a 3-2 count, I think any catcher is going to expect it.
Sure, but originally on the first one when it got fouled, I assume you're just kind of like, well, all right, they're not going to try double steal with these guys with nobody out. Okay, they just went and it fouled. Okay, now I know. Like, I feel like that puts the idea in his head, and that makes you ready for it.
Well, if any indication was, you know, he obviously had time to double clutch and still throw him out by a couple of feet. So
he knew that this is a runner who does not run fast. If he goes and we get a strike, and let's be honest, the strike was a borderline strike. That was a pitcher strike, but had been called earlier in the game. And it was an outside pitch, so it wasn't even the easiest pitch to throw on because he wasn't coming inside already. He was moving away from third base, had to come back, double clutch, and then had still plenty of time to throw him out. So, I mean, I got to say, I think Dusty Baker makes that move with a two-run deficit, and I don't say it's a bad move. With a three-run deficit, I think it changes everything because you're not going to tie the game up with that move. You're just not, you know? What you're going to do is you're potentially going to kill the momentum of your inning and take your team completely out of the game. So the other thing is leaving Latos in. We can all say that we agree that he left Latos in too long, right?
Yeah.
I know he's going to argue the other way on that one.
Once you load the bases, I mean, I get it. We've seen Kane kind of work his way out of situations like that. And if Dusty thinks he's got good stuff, I get where he's coming from. But Dusty kind of thinks everybody has good stuff. And
Latos has owned the Giants in games that mean nothing. But in games that actually mean something, he has not. And I think... But Baker might have wanted to look at that and look at...
Well, Latos's. Blanco singled, Crawford tripled. Yeah. Then there, I believe, is an error after that.
Yes.
Then Panda singled.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the walk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's just all these players in a row.
And you're ending it on a walk, too.
Fifth inning.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then he was just wild. And then he's going to be, you know, facing the potential MVP of the National League, and he doesn't have anywhere to put him. So he's got to probably groove something at some point.
Yeah. He's going
to
get pitches. Yeah.
And the thing is, too, he was mad.
Surprising.
He was upset, visibly upset at the strike zone he was getting. He was visibly upset at the things that were happening, at his fielders letting him down. He was visibly upset about what was going on around him.
Clearly not as focused as he was earlier.
Yeah, you don't want a pitcher who is upset throwing a pitch to Buster Posey. You just don't want that. You never want that. So, if for any other reason than just his mental status at that time, I think you got to pull him. You know what I mean? Because another guy coming in is going to be calm, come out of the bullpen. It's my job to come into a game where the bases are loaded. You know, that's my job. I'm a bullpen guy. When you're a starter and you gave up all that, you might be pressing a little bit differently, and you're also pissed. So, all right, let's move on. Tweet at me, brah. What you got, Chad? You got some good stuff for us?
All right, I have two things. First of them is not a tweet.
Okay.
But apparently, Major League Baseball, they have this division called Advanced Media, which handles
they're the ones who probably make all the shirts and stuff, too, right?
And everything like that. What was that?
The shirts that say, like, National League Championships.
I don't even know if they handle that stuff.
Okay. I'm assuming.
By the way, I heard on a side note that they do take those shirts that they, you know, and hats that they
send to other countries
way ahead of time. Yeah, and they send them to other countries to
third world countries and stuff.
There are Rangers 2010 World Series caps
and 2011
World Series caps and 2011.
Yep.
And potentially Rangers wild card 2011 playoff shirts. Sure. You know.
Sure.
American League West champion.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. They probably had all those all set for about a day. A
brand new shipment of those just came in.
So whoever was in charge of sending out the playoff World Series ticket information for the Washington Nationals, who works for Major League Baseball Advanced Media, sent it on a timer, basically saying, I was going to be sent out at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in the morning. Well, apparently that person fell asleep at the switch, went to bed, didn't watch the rest of the game, whatever it was. Cards make their comeback. They beat the Nats. The email goes out this morning at 7 a.m. A lot of Nationals season ticket holders, all of them, woke up this morning with that email in their box saying that they had an opportunity to buy World Series tickets. So
I wonder how many of them I wonder how many Nationals season ticket holders thought, yeah, I'll still take World Series tickets. When do I get to go to the World Series? Yeah. So,
well, better yet, what if, you know, because the game ended after midnight.
Yeah.
And maybe there was a chance that you had a couple of Nationals fans who had to go to bed because of their work schedule or school or something like that.
Oh, so they don't even know. Exactly.
They didn't even know. They went to bed. Oh, they're up 6-0. Okay, they're probably going to win. I'm going to go to bed. Wake up in the morning and they get that email. They're like, yeah, all right, I'm going to get my World Series tickets.
Yep. Well, here's the thing.
Then they go to work and they're like, what do you mean the Nationals?
Yeah, exactly. I just spent $2,000.
They were up 6-0. They were up 6-2 when I went to bed. Come on.
Now, my stepdad is a Cardinals fan. He said he felt sick to his stomach when the Cardinals were losing 6-0, decided to watch Tin Cup, the movie Tin Cup, and then go to bed. And then, so he goes to bed. He generally wakes up at like 5 a.m. Retired and everything.
At which point, the game was practically still going. But, yeah. Right, I got you.
He wakes up at 5 a.m. They were tied. No, but he wakes up at 5 a.m. and finds out that they won the game and just kicks himself. And I can't believe a Cardinals fan would do this after what happened last year. It's like, really? Yeah. What are you thinking?
Yeah. He's been on the brink so many times.
Yeah. This is when it gets good, man.
That's the only time your team plays.
Exactly. All right, we got another one.
You put them up by 5, and they're just going to kind of, yeah, that's cool, whatever.
It's like an A's fan leaving before the 9th inning. You don't do that, right? So anyway.
Yeah, they don't, for the record.
No, they don't. No, they don't. They don't even leave when the game is over.
I was at game 5. I was at game 5, and, you know, it was.
They all expected to come back and win, right? Everybody,
they all expected. I mean, and even if they didn't expect to come back, nobody acted like it. Everybody was behind that team the whole way. It's something that I definitely would agree.
Everybody except the owner was behind that team the whole way. Yeah, everybody except the owner, which is kind of the most important guy to be behind the team. Chad, you got another tweet for us?
Yeah, so this was from Hector Sanchez right after they clinched Game 5.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Obviously, he's primarily a Spanish speaker, but I just thought this was pretty funny, not only because of his non-English ability, but also...
I use Google Translate on all his tweets, actually, just to see what he's saying.
Yeah, there you go. Just how does
Google Translate go? I'm just saying. Google Translate doesn't come up with that.
But he says, fuck yeah. I said, why not us? Let's go. I love you guys, Giants. We changed the history.
They changed anyway, the history. Space.
We changed the history.
Someone needs to make that a sign.
And then 4 exclamation points.
Someone needs to make that a sign. We changed the history. That should be a Giant sign.
That's going to be their new slogan.
Yeah, in the stands, we changed the history.
We changed the history.
2012 Giants, we changed the history. All right, new favorite guy time. Chad, start us off.
Yeah, Hunter Pence. Ah, he seemed to be the touchstone.
All right.
He didn't play very well, but I don't think if it was for him, the Giants would have won this series.
He had some big moments. Whether he played well the entire way or not, he had big moments, and big moments win games, so...
And, you know, you say that stuff like speeches may not necessarily matter, that it is like a game of stats and numbers, but having motivation really, really does change things. You know it if you've done it yourself.
Yeah.
Adrenaline matters. And, I mean, just having getting fired up like that, you could tell all the guys thought that it mattered, and maybe that means it did.
Yep,
that may
absolutely
be all it takes.
They didn't want to go play golf. They wanted
to play more baseball. And, you know, I loved some of the things he said. He said, I don't want to go home yet. And I don't think anybody on that team disagreed with him. They all thought, yeah, I don't want to go home yet either. They like being around each other, and there's definitely something to be said for that. There's not a lot of times in Major League Baseball, 25 guys take 25 cabs after the game and go 25 different directions, hook up with 75 different girls, and you know, but this team
that's a little conservative there.
Sorry, yeah, it's probably a little, yeah. This team, you know, they actually seem to want to hang out with each other, so I really like that about the Giants. I'm gonna go with Tim Lincecum. Tim Lincecum had a really, really rough season, as we all know. We talked about it plenty of times on this podcast. And it was really a joy to see him. You know, honestly, the first appearance, game two, was bittersweet because of the fact that we were excited to see Tim Lincecum pitch so well. But at that point, the game was, you know, already kind of getting out of hand. And even though he kind of kept us in there, it didn't quite work out so well. But, you know... Him coming in throughout the series and pitching well, just, you know, it spoke the world of his playoff experience, his mentality, his will to compete. The guy just, you know, he wants to go out and he wants to take the ball in big games. And, you know, I hope he gets plenty more chances to take the ball in big games for the Giants. I would love to see this guy turn it around and keep it there from here on out. Ben, who's your new favorite guy?
I'm going to go with George Contos, who really got used.
Yeah.
He really ended up being the fireman a lot in this one. Even though he wasn't the closer, he really got brought in a lot of tense situations. And Contos really, you know, he's been drawing eyes ever since the trade with Chris Stewart. Mac over at Aris Sports, Third Street Kings, did a whole piece about how good he was doing in the minors. And when he came up, he really stuck with that. He didn't let a lot of guys on base. He was real shut down. And when we really needed somebody to pick up one of the starters, Contos was the guy that we would turn to time after time after time, no matter how much it seemed like he needed a rest. You know what? Contos was always game to go, and he was real solid. So good job, Rook. I got to say, Contos has got to be my guy for the NLDS.
Yeah, I think, you know what, being the first guy or the last guy of the bullpen doesn't matter. The outs still count the same. So, you know, and he seems to be the guy who gets that first call. I think we collectively all say that our always favorite guy, though, right now is Buster Posey, right? I mean, none of us picked him, but... let's be honest, he deserves a mention.
Duh.
It's funny. He didn't get his hand slapped after the game. Did you guys see that, where he's kind of holding his hand out and everything?
Everybody was like, dude.
It's at the point now where he's like the popular kid who nobody calls anymore because they always expect him to be hanging out with somebody anyway. So, like, nobody's, like, actually hanging out with him because he's, you know.
Like, everybody loves Buster. He'll be fine.
Yeah. You hit the grand slam. Yeah, well, we all expected you to do that.
Yeah, so. That's whatever, dude. Yeah. It's your job.
We all called that. So, yeah. All right. So, let's...
good job, whatever. Yeah. All right.
Let's hate on some people. Chad, start us off one more time.
All right, Carlos Beltran.
All right.
Yeah. He definitely shunned the Giants for a bigger contract with the Cards.
Sure.
And maybe he thought they had a better chance of making the postseason, and here they are meeting together. So it'll be interesting to see how he patrols right field. And he's one of the best postseason players in postseason history. He has a knack for it.
Yeah.
I mean, he hit the crap out of the ball the whole division series. So he's definitely a player to be careful of, but it'll just be interesting to see how the Giants fans react to his return and how he performs.
I'm going to guess boos, but, you know,
I think he's either going to get a smattering of applause or just it's going to be one solid boo from the entire.
I think big time boos. I think he gets the most boos of any Cardinals player that gets announced. But I feel like this is a little bit of the Uribe kind of syndrome, where I want him to have gone to that other team and then us knock them out, right? You know what I mean? Like Uribe, it's like
some strange poetic justice to that. I agree. Yeah.
Why did you go over there? What were you thinking? You know what I mean? You want him to feel like an idiot for leaving this team. So anyway, I'm going to go with Zach Cozart, and my reason for that is that every single time he came to the plate in this series, they played that stupid half.
That Alex
pop
Clare song?
Half dubstep song. Yeah, that's just so annoying.
I actually don't mind that song, but
when you hear it four times a game over three games, you know, and nobody else on that team had walk up music. What was up with that? And every single time he came up, they played that song.
He needs it. I don't know.
More people need to do what the Nationals have done with their walk up music.
What do they do with their walk up music?
Did you get to watch any of the games?
I barely got to see any of it, yeah.
Every time Michael Morse comes up, they played Aha's Take on Me. That's his. Okay. And the entire crowd sang along.
All right.
Like, if you've never seen 45,000 people do karaoke to Take on Me simultaneously,
well,
it's amazing.
We've seen 41,000 do When the Lights Go Out in the City, like,
yeah, but that's
times?
Not some, that's not somebody's walk-up music. They sang Take on Me four times per game.
Yeah,
that's pretty fun.
Like, that's pretty good.
Most people wouldn't even listen to Aha four times per game. And there they were. Or, you know, with Jason Worth walk-up music, everybody got into it in Washington. So, you know, I'm really sorry to see him go. But at the same time, with a record of 1-5, I am kind of glad not to be facing them.
Yeah, but they're
I don't know
team.
That.
I'm sorry.
It was kind of a lesser evil as far as, like, how dangerous they were going to be for us. I just thought that the Nats were a better story. And I really liked the way that team was playing.
Well, once again, everybody's behind that team except for the general manager. So they got Oakland A syndrome over there.
Da-na-na-na-na.
All right. Ben, hate on somebody for us.
All right. So, before I hit on somebody, I want to get you guys' opinion over under on the number of boos and or cheers for Mike Matheny.
Oh, Mike Matheny gets over. All cheers.
Yeah, I think
absolutely
it's all
cheers.
Cheers. It's all cheers.
Absolutely cheers. I got to agree with you. So, with that said, I'm going to go ahead and hate on everybody who sent death threats to Drew Storen after the Nats Cards game yesterday.
Ouch, I haven't heard about that.
That's how Washington does it. I mean, when you don't like somebody, they send death threats, right?
Well, Damn it, Willie.
That's a DC thing. That's not,
no, you know what, though,
that's not
you
a Washington Nationals thing. That's a DC thing.
You guys may remember, though, that was also a San Francisco thing after Kyle Williams. So, I mean, we kind of have a soft spot for guys that get sent death threats on Twitter.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's a young guy in probably the biggest closing situation of his career in his, you know, the end of his first postseason series. And he implodes and then the offense doesn't pick him up. And it's rough. It sucks. I'm really upset that the Nationals didn't get in, even though I'm kind of happy not to be facing them. But it's not really a mixed blessing. I just think it sucks. And that said, there's no way that I would then tell Drew Storen that he should die. A lot of the Giants fans that I saw took to Twitter and said, Drew Storen, please don't log on Twitter tonight. Whatever you do, please just don't log on Twitter. And I was like,
but you know what? Whatever. There's so many more reasons that they did not win. And I think number one, you can point to the fact that they shut their best pitcher down. So, you know, send death threats to the GM if you're going to send death threats to anybody.
You know, I'm sure Strasburg's arm wouldn't have fallen off if he had the last
five
or six games
he pitched. He'd be just fine.
Maybe if he'd, you know, taken it easy, he said he could come back in the postseason, something. But
come on. All right. So, why will we win it all? Chad, you seem to be a good leadoff hitter. Go ahead and lead
it off. So AT&T, I know they say there's magic inside, but the Cards seem to have a lot of that the last couple of years. So the Giants just need to stop whatever comeback magic the Cards have and just use their own. So as long as I think that's it. I mean, if they take control of games and they pitch like they can, they hit like they can, they're going to win 4 out of 6. It's just that oddball game or two that the Cards, you know, mount a 3 or 4 run comeback in the last inning or two. That's what they need to stop. They need to hold a lead. They need to, you know, put their foot on their necks if they're up. They just got
to
prevent these guys from coming back.
So this is like a magic on magic situation.
I don't know what happens.
It's like Harry Potter and Voldemort, like holding wands at each other.
Look. The Dodgers are really far south. Can we stop talking about magic, please?
Okay, yeah, I guess that's true. what's the magic number for the Dodgers? What's the magic number for the Giants? Yeah, okay.
The magic number for the Dodgers starts with a G and ends with gone.
Yeah,
I guess one.
All right, so Ben, what is your reason for the Giants winning it all?
There's pretty much four teams left here. in this stage of the competition. One of them is the famed Evil Empire in pinstripes. Mm. One of them is hopped up on clutch buterol. Mm. So I got to say, let's go ahead and vote for the good guys. I think it's got to be Tigers Giants 2012 here.
What do you say to the people who say that Miguel Cabrera like sacrifices animals to win triple crowns? Have you heard this stuff?
Yeah, what do you think A-Rod does to earn $126 million contracts?
Well, he sacrifices drugs into his bloodstream, but...
There you go.
But, no, isn't that weird? I mean, isn't that, like, a weird assertion? Like,
Where exactly did Raul Ibanez get all of these home runs at the end of the game from? I mean...
Dude, he's, yeah, like, 39. He's in the prime of his career.
Maybe he's just particularly talented. I'm inclined to think that maybe there's a couple of pentagrams drawn somewhere, you know.
It's just such a strange thing to say.
Sold, you know, that kind of thing.
It's such a strange thing to say, though, about, like, oh, we all know that Miguel Cabrera is sacrificing animals. Like, what? What?
Okay, look.
We all know that? Who knows that? What is this guy talking? You know what I mean? It's such a weird thing.
Willie, all of us know that. Like, it's written on his Wikipedia page or something.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You realize that he says it in all of his post-game interviews. The Nationals chicken guy sacrificed a rubber chicken and then held a ceremony over the Nationals dugout to try and clear it of bad juju.
We can agree on this, right? Let's not kill any animals for the sake of baseball anymore. Like, people. What the hell? No sacrificing stuff just for the sake of baseball.
Not kill anything, but, you know, grass.
Kill the baseball. You know what I mean? Do that. All right. I'm going to say that the Giants are going all the way because the Cards might have some magic, but they don't got this kind of magic. They don't got the Giants magic.
Got down 2011, to nothing in a best of five
exactly.
series.
2011, they got lucky. We weren't there. Buster Posey got hurt. We weren't there. If we were there, it would have been a completely different situation. That Giants team lost their heart and soul. The heart and soul is back and in full effect, and we also have the magic working for us. And I'm sorry, but the Giants story is just, it's a better one. And as much as the Cardinals have some really cool stuff going for them, and you got to say their offense is fantastic, I think the Giants
Mike Mussini.
Yep, I think the Giants are, I think when those wands go at each other and the special effects are going or whatever, the Giants won, somehow they like push forward or something. I don't know how that ever ends up playing out, but...
With like the two like big funny colored sparks pushing each other.
Somebody
and going
else
back
has
and
to
forth.
Like in, you know, distract one of them or something, right? That's always how it
is.
Right,
so what we have to do is one of us has to dress up as Harry Potter, but
yeah,
have
exactly.
orange and black, and then with a little SF on the forehead instead of the scar.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one needs to dress up as Voldemort and all red.
There you go.
That'll work.
Do we just need go. To go and like grab the Harry Potter uniforms that the Fresno Grizzlies used last year?
Sure.
I mean, Mark Green
yeah.
might still have
they
his.
They still got him. I'm sure. Know. I'm sure they still got him. And also,
Prince still got his. I don't know.
Let's be honest. The Giants, we changed the history. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the TortureCast, episode 39, of course, the Roberto Kelly episode. Let's go Giants, take on the Cardinals. We'll probably be back after this series, I'm hopeful, in between this one and the next one, if not sooner. We'll see when the next time we can record is, but, you know, we got to get one going. And hopefully that will be one where we're planning out our next series in the World Series against the Tigers. So looking forward to that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at TortureCast. You can also follow us individually at ChadK21, at Fried Duck, and I am at Willie Dills. Also, go check out the blog at torturecast.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can donate using PayPal. You can leave us 5-star reviews. You can do all those things, and please do. So, all right, we'll see
sacrifice
you next time.
Sacrifice some animals for us.
Yeah, you can sacrifice animals for us. Sure, why not? All right.
Stop it. Change the history.
That'll do it for this episode. We change the history. Boom. A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.